This is the Home Tech Podcast, show number 90, recorded on October 11th, 2012. I am your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live and commercial-free from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in chilly and fall-like Bellevue, Nebraska. And we post the show each week with world-class show notes out at theAverageGuy.tv. If you have questions, comments, or contributions, you can contact the show, podcast@theAverageGuy.tv. Track me down on Twitter. A lot of you have been doing that lately, and that is great. Just at Jay Colliston. You can follow the show schedule. I tweet out the day of, just so you know what time the show is going to start, out at TheAverageGuy.tv. If you're listening to us audio only, or we're going to try something new with Blog Talk Radio tonight, listen to the complete show on demand with YouTube video over at TheAverageGuy.tv. So we have a little, if you go to TheAverageGuy.tv, for each show we'll have a box that's got the YouTube video in it. We're getting a lot more hits on YouTube, and that's great. The video adds a little bit to this, so it's kind of nice to watch it that way, and you can watch that at theAverageGuy.tv. If you are watching the video, subscribe to the YouTube channel with the link right above. Just right up there, click on subscribe, and you will always be notified when new shows come out on YouTube. And then if you want to watch the show live, you can do that each Thursday night, most Thursday nights, 8 p.m. Central, over at theAverageGuy.tv/live. Good to be back. And Andrew, it's good to have you back on the show. I feel like we've been hit or miss over the last couple weeks just with everybody's schedule. My travel schedule has been tough. You've been under the weather and other things. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. My voice is back to normal. I can talk for about 15 minutes without coughing, which is always a bonus.
That's always good.
You and I managed to almost pass for about 5 minutes, I think, or 10 minutes last weekend when you were on your phone, and it was about 1 a.m. in the morning here. So
yeah, I didn't realize it was that late. Yeah. Sorry about that.
Oh, that's all right. I was still up and about. So
we started chatting with each other, and then you're like, hey mate, I need to go to bed. I was like, oh shoot, yeah. Sorry, yeah, it's so late.
I think I was chatting to you before, after, and during a run around a university campus.
Yeah, so I had been out at the University of Southern California and got out for an early morning. Of course, I woke up at 5 a.m. like, bing, you know, okay, Jim, time to wake up. And so it's 2 hours off the West Coast, or off the Central time zone. So I thought, well, I might as well go out and get a, you know, if you're at USC, you got to run, right? Well, the campus, I was telling Rennie in the pre-show, the campus is not in a great part of L.A., and so you got to be very, very careful where you go. So I kind of circled around. You saw my map on Runkeep,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I kind of circled around the campus, and then I ran the streets on the inside. And as I was running by, I found the track. And I thought, oh, well, I'll just finish. This will be cool. I'll just finish on the track. So I did a lap around the track and finished it up. And that's when you caught me, and we were – so as I was walking back to the hotel, you and I were – Skyping, I was on my phone and we were talking. So
when you say not the best type of neighborhood, do you mean it's one of the neighborhoods where you run with a handgun and a fanny pack? Or
if you're gonna run in that neighborhood, you are running with a purpose, my friend, and that's away from somebody or dodging bullets. Yeah, it's not, you know, at 5 or 6 in the morning. It's I can run just about in any neighborhood. The gangs go to bed; they have to sleep too. So I never worry about those things, but yeah, that's USC in Southern California, a really bad part of town. So, Andrew, it's good to have you back. Thanks for coming on. Of course, we also have Rennie Phipps with us tonight. Rennie's also from Brisbane in Australia. You're in Brisbane, right?
In Brisbane, yeah.
Yeah, Brisbane, Australia. Rennie, thanks for coming on tonight. We're all Australian tonight. How are you?
I'm doing well, mate. I'm doing well. It's a lovely Friday morning here and in Brisbane. We don't have daylight saving here, so
yeah,
we got a time difference as well now between Melbourne and Brisbane. But
oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, fades the curtains and upsets the cows if you don't have daylight saving.
Yeah, it's a problem. It's a real problem for the cows, apparently.
Well, it's good to have you on. And again, we were talking in pre-show about you. You're going to make maybe a trip out here to the U.S. So you had Chicago on your docket. What else are you going to see while you're here in the U.S.?
Well, we fly into L.A. I got a couple of days in L.A. Then we're going to drive up the coast road to San Francisco, make our, you know, the obligatory pilgrimage down to Las Vegas.
Nice.
And then we head up to New Orleans. Oh, I crossed to New Orleans, yeah, up to Chicago. And we'll be in New York at Christmas time.
Oh, good.
And we'll have New Year's Eve in Washington.
Well, that you can't. That's a great. You're catching all the good spots. If you're here in the United States during the winter, those are the good spots to be. If you don't mind cold, it's going to be cold, right? You better bring your jacket.
It worries me.
Yeah, it's going to be. It's going to be cold. Good tech, a good jacket is going to be necessary. Hat and gloves and all that good stuff. Although, last winter, you know, we almost didn't even have a winter last year. It was so mild here. So maybe you'll get lucky. Global warming will kick in for you, and you'll be able to. You know, short sleeves on Christmas Day. What do you think?
That'd be much appreciated. Thank you.
Yeah, I've jinxed it. You're doomed now. That certainly is not going to happen. Well, guys, thanks for coming in this evening. We got a little tech talk to do, and let's get right to it. I want to get started with a little Windows Home Server talk. We are all a part of the Windows Home Server community, which is quickly morphing into just Windows Server. As the Windows Home Server 2011, the next version up for that, has merged with the Small Business Server and now is just Windows Server 2012 Essentials. And still kind of a 20. It's actually for the home server guys. While the price goes up, at least at this point, to $425 for the licensing of the software, the benefits go up as well. A little bit better, a few more clients from 10 to 25. And I think, guys, to be honest with you, a little bit better support from Windows, from Microsoft, because the Small Business Server community has really been aggressive with Microsoft in this area. And I mentioned this on the Home Server show last night. The Small Business Server MVPs are pretty vocal with them on the calls and really kind of hold Microsoft to the fire. So I think that product will actually still get some attention, maybe a little bit more than the old Windows Home Server did. And so some exciting things going on. I don't want to turn this into the home server show, and we talked a bunch about that last night. But, Rennie, you pulled up an article here from We Got Served talking about the ability to use Windows, WSUS, right? Windows Update That's Services, right. Windows Server Update yeah. Services. Talk a little bit about that. For you, I know with a metered bandwidth, this might be kind of a helpful thing to have.
Yeah, that's been part of the inspiration behind me giving it a try. But yeah, it does only work on a server. It doesn't actually work on Server Essentials as yet, as we heard yesterday. But I'm running it on my 2011 box. And what it actually does is enables you to just download all the Windows updates for whatever product you've got. Just do it the once, keep them on the server, and then you can more or less dish them out to all the other PCs on the network. And if you've got, you know, like most people watching the show, I imagine you've probably got at least 3, 4, maybe 5 PCs running, all of various vintages and operating systems or whatever. It's a good way just to cut down on the amount of downloading you're doing, and a good way actually to make sure that, you know, the updates get to where they're needed, basically. So you haven't got 5 machines all downloading at the same time. And the other good thing, too, if you do a complete system rebuild, which is what I'm going to be doing over the weekend, you've got all the updates there. You don't have to go and download them again. They're already on your server. So it's just you just transfer them over the local network and you're done. So it takes a bit to set up, but it's time well spent.
Yeah, you know, there's two things as you were talking about that, at first I was thinking, I have unmetered bandwidth. I'm on a fast connection, and I'm not going to go through it. But you know, even with those conditions, I do remember every time I set up a new PC, it does take a while for me to download. I mean, just because I have unlimited bandwidth and pretty good speeds up and down here, that doesn't mean when I connect to the Microsoft server that I'm necessarily going to get their fastest connection, you know, downloading that. And, you know, installing Windows 7 today, it may take up to an hour for me to download all the updates. Have you had experience with that in the past? Is it really that much faster if you've got those files local to
update? Absolutely. It's like, it'd take you 10 minutes instead of, well, for me, it'd be, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours, depending on, how many updates there are to come through, and you know, if there's service packs and stuff. I mean, they're quite large. So even Windows 8 was 160 gig the other day.
Yeah, it was big. It was a big update. And you know what? It's going to keep being big, especially if you're going to be a Windows 8. Actually, I'm glad you mentioned this because I hadn't thought all the way through on this one. Windows 8 is going to iterate a lot faster, or they're going to iterate faster. Microsoft is going to iterate faster with Windows 8, and I think those updates are going to be a little bit larger. Might be a great idea just to be able to house those things locally for all your updates.
Indeed, yeah.
I mean, it just makes practical sense to get them done faster. Andrew, have you messed with this at all? Well, hold on. Before you answer that question, Rennie, have you actually set this up yet? Have you gone through that, or are you planning to do it this weekend?
I've done it.
Okay.
It's I'll put the link in the show notes, but it's not the easiest thing to do, but there's a really good walkthrough, I should say, on we got served. I think they do about three pages worth of installation instructions, and if you follow that, you can't go wrong. But yeah,
Does it go back and just start downloading all? I mean, does it just go back and get all the updates from a certain time period and have them ready, or do you have to tell it what to have ready and available for the PCs that are on your network?
I think it gets every update for every OS.
Okay. Wow.
Or every product.
So that's going to be a little bit of a blast to if you are metered, you're going to get a little bit of blast that first go around. Do you have any idea how big that was and how long it took to?
Lonnie did it for Windows 7 and Office 2010. I can't remember the actual file sizes. Okay. No.
But so you can select what OSs that you want to have available.
Oh, absolutely. For the server,
right? Okay. All right. So you can limit those to whatever you have in your network, and it'll take care of those for you. Andrew, have you messed with that at all in the enterprise? Have you done much? I know, because it's a big enterprise tool.
Yeah, it used to be a go-to product for patch deployment. So I've probably I've configured in about 8 different customer spaces, going back as far as version 1 of the product. So as Rennie said, it's a pretty good it's a good thing, especially once you get into a domain environment. You can control when your policies go to your machines via group policy. You know, whether they force a reboot, whether you prompt administrative or non-administrative users that their Apache is about to install. And again, it is a good way if your bandwidth to restrict just to the operating systems and the applications, but I think the current version will patch everything back to Windows 2000 and all the way through to Windows 8, and then the SQL products, the SharePoint products, and Office as well. I think Office as far back as 2007.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And does it update itself? So obviously it updates itself from whenever Microsoft releases, when it's patch Tuesday.
It'll update itself based on the rules you configure into it. So you can tell it to go and pull an update 3 or 4 times a day or check for updates. You can set it to auto-approve, or you can, as you would in the enterprise, you can set it so that you only approve the patches that you want to deploy, which is typically how we use it. I've got it running on an SPS 2011 box at the moment, an Essentials box, but that's in a small business where Michelle works, but it's hard for me to see the value in a business environment if you've got an unfettered internet connection. You're better off just letting Windows Update do the job, because to me it adds another workload to a otherwise fairly busy machine. So for example, they're running their business off a microserver, running SPS 2011, and QuickBooks runs off that particular server. So, when you add WSUS and a SQL engine onto that as well, it really starts stressing out that little N40L processor.
Well, but if you put that to download at night, right, you could restrict the, hey, don't do any of this work, and do it in the middle of the night and check and download that. And then don't do any updates, right? You could do it. You could limit it that way, right?
Yeah, but you got to remember also, I guess, that you got to have your clients turned on when you're doing your update. So if you've got a fairly low end processor, it still gives the box a good smacking when they go out through their update. So it's a delicate balancing act.
Yeah.
But it's an exceptionally good product, and we've used it as a go-to product for probably 10 years now. In when we can't deploy a corporate strength tool, so if we can't deploy an SMS or an SCCM or, you know, one of the HP branded products that does it as well. And the mechanism is foolproof. You know, if you're in a corporate environment with low bandwidth between offices, it's bandwidth aware for its network consumption because it uses the background intelligent transfer system, which is bits. And so if you've got, say, a 128K DSL line, which some businesses still have, it'll scale down the bandwidth that consumes, which is a really nice feature. Whereas, you know, a lot of the other products just go, well, what have you, how much
what do you got?
You watch your network flatline. So yeah, it's a good product. And if you got, as Rennie said, you got more than four or five machines, it's going to save you a ton of bandwidth and a ton of time as well. I built a Windows 7 machine the other day that I reckon took an hour and a half by the time it had done all the downloads, reboots, and the like. And, you know, I've got a 100 megabit connection. So if I've got it locally, it's got to come down faster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Rennie, what's the process to attach the clients to force this, you know, to force the clients to go to the server as opposed to going to get them from Microsoft?
We just turn off automatic updates, basically.
Okay. So go into the update on each PC. Go into the Microsoft update and turn that off. Turn off automatic updates. Mm-hmm.
Or you point them. Then you, I just put a favorite in the browser, which sends them to a port on the Windows Home server.
Okay.
And they get the downloads from
there. And that's where they get it from. So that's that easy. You don't have to hack anything or go in and...
No. It's easy. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You can do a reg hack as well so that it'll do it all automatically. So if your WSUS server's downloaded, say, Service Pack 1 for Windows 8, it'll automatically get broadcast down to your machines and advertised.
Okay.
Which is how we do it in the enterprise. You either reg-hack the box or you push it out via group policy.
And you, Rennie, did you do any kind of policy stuff on there, or is it just
no. Okay? I've just scratched the surface on this. Yeah. So I'm just glad it works.
Yeah. And how did you test it? Did you have something that that needed to be updated that you just did it, or how did you test it?
Well, I only set it up last weekend, and there was a bunch of downloads on Wednesday or Tuesday. Yeah. So I thought, well, you know, here's my big chance, and they all went through. And
nice. Yeah, that was a good.
Yeah, good test.
Good week to do it. I came down to my PCs on Wednesday. I had an early morning at a 7 a.m. podcast record session that I was doing for another podcast that I do, and everything had rebooted. I was like, oh, crap. And this microphone doesn't play nice after a reboot. It takes a little bit of, you know, holding your mouth right and standing up on one foot and tapping your head before it works. And so I was, I was not really pleased that, because I came in about 5 minutes to seven thinking, you know, I could just fire stuff up and get the podcast going, and no truth. Big updates for just about everything. Windows 7, all my Windows 7 stuff rebooted. Windows 8 had a huge, what did we say, about 140, what did you say, Rennie?
160, I think.
160 gig.
Yeah.
Is that a service pack, or is that just a roll-up?
Well, they're calling it just an update. Yeah, it's just an update. A lot of changes, though. If you looked at the and Zadler did a nice job of kind of keying me in. There were about four things. There were some screen improvements. There were some battery improvements. There were some. I'm sure there were some security pieces buried in there. Hey, Rennie, it's a non-smoking show.
I forgot.
Oh, that's gold. We bring it to you.
I've been waiting to say that for a while. I just wanted to let you know. The no, I'm just messing
Didn't
with you.
Didn't see a sign up anywhere.
The oh, I totally lost my train of thought.
That'll teach you.
That'll teach me. Well, anyway, so that's I'll have to give that a spin. So behind me, I've got 2011 Windows Home Server 2011 running, and with 2012 coming out, and just to be clear, this service works on 2011. It's not supported for 2012 Essentials yet, although I think that will be coming here pretty quick. So I'll wait until they announce support for 2012 Essentials, because I downloaded the RTM, went live this last week, and or early this week, maybe Tuesday. I think Tuesday at noon. And of course, we all raced to download it, and I've got it installed, and I like it. It will be probably where I go next from a home server standpoint. The domain is a non-issue now for the most part. I just set it up, but I can take all those PCs off the domain. And actually, on Windows 8 now, when you set up the connector for the very first time and you reboot, it'll have you reboot. You get an option right on the very front page that says, do you want to log in with your Microsoft account or your domain account? Right there. And that's new in Windows 8. That didn't work before, I know, because I had to do some crazy finagling to make that work the last time we tested it. So, so it seems like they're getting their act together. And like I said, the small business server team is just wrangling them every chance they get. Because... you know, that Essentials product was a couple products. They just kind of jammed together, right? It was some home server functionality and some small business server functionality, and they just kind of jammed it all together and made Essentials and said, no more 10 licenses. It's going to be 25. It's going to be $400. Deal with it. And so there's certainly some things that didn't work well right out of the chute. I think they'll be fixing that stuff as we go forward. So, Andrew, any thoughts on 2012? I know you've been... 2012 Essentials, you've just been too busy to kind of take a peek at it?
I've had a look at the Enterprise class stuff, so Standard and whatever the other version is. We'll probably be fair. I think in some of our spaces we'll be fairly quick to adopt it, but I think across the board, you know, we've still got customers who are, you know, well entrenched on Windows 2003 and, you know, only just starting to get deployments of 2008 R2. So I think, you know, 2012 is going to be an adoption curve. But it'll be interesting to see. We've, in the same family, we've just started, testing, the Enterprise build for Windows 8. And that there's an awful lot of tools that don't work on it. So from an Enterprise support perspective, you know, if the Java based stuff doesn't like playing on Windows 8, you know, if you're an office worker, yeah, it works fine. But as soon as you need to do a little bit more than that, it starts to present challenges.
Yeah. I got a JavaScript error the other day on something. I was in there, so it's we got a ways to go.
Windows 8 on Microsoft is fantastic. So SharePoint integration. If you run up Office 2013 on it, it integrates really well with all the Microsoft services. So, you know, it's definitely going places. I think the Enterprise will have to do a lot of tweaking. I think it's a much bigger social compatibility step than Vista or XP/Vista to Windows.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Enterprise will take its time for sure. I don't think there's going to be a huge rush. I am going to get a demo on Monday. My SharePoint guy is going to give me a demo of 2013. In our environment, and that'll kind of be good to see. There's a bunch of new stuff coming with it. We're a combination of 2010 and 07. 2010 and 07, and we're going to look for some. We're actually implementing some data retention policies that we'll implement on 2013, then migrate everything over the next year. So it's a good time to do some of those things and take advantage of some new technology. This isn't an Enterprise show, so we'll drop it here at that. But a lot of if you're interested, last week a really good not last week, but just yesterday, maybe it felt like last week. Yesterday, a great discussion around 2012 Essentials. We had Susan Bradley, who's the SBS diva, on, and she went through some things. You got to kind of slow that podcast down and listen to it. She covered a lot of information in a short period of time.
She's fantastic to listen to as well.
Yeah, Yeah, she's got her act together for sure. And so if you're interested, if you're listening to the show and you don't listen to the Home Server Show and you're wondering what the heck we talk about, head over to homeservershow.com and get that, although I feel like most of you probably come from that environment. Okay, Rennie,
my brain still hurts after that.
Yeah. It's, you know what, there's just so many things going on right now with it, and there's so many new things both on the server and on the desktop, and it's great. It's great to cover Microsoft now. I mean, a couple of years ago, things moved really slow, and they weren't iterating, and now they're just moving so fast, I'm having a hard time keeping up. It's a good time. It's a good time to be covering Microsoft. For those who hung out and didn't jump on the Apple bandwagon so quickly, it's good to be back here in the Microsoft ecosystem.
Ecosystem's about to be Windows-ized.
It really is, isn't it? Seen? I'm seeing the switch, the magnetic, just changed, went from north to south, and now Apple's getting just hammered.
Yeah, I was describing it to someone the other day. They were saying to me, "What's Windows 8 and what's Windows Phone 8 and what's the new Windows Server product line and all the offices and whatnot?" They're saying, "So what's it all about?" And I said, "Think about Apple and how Apple have got the Mac server, they've got the iMac, they've got the MacBook, they've got the iPad, the iPhone, and everything's got the same look and feel." I said, "Transfer it across onto the Windows platform." Yeah. So it's what you've known forever, and all of a sudden everything's gonna work together.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And there'll be some bumps in the road, but we've got some new hardware. Let's talk about this real quick. If you've been following the news lately, you've seen just a rash of new hardware coming out for Windows 8. We kind of wondered, or there were some questions about, is anybody going to build Windows 8 hardware? I mean, there was this kind of. About 2 months ago, there was this what are we going to see? Is everybody going to bail? And that's not the case at all. Lenovo has released three new, and this is just the tip of the iceberg, I think, three new really nice boxes that are coming out that are touch-enabled and have nice form factors and are going to look great, and I think there'll be some more stuff coming. There's a new Vio, I think it's Vio, a new piece of hardware that's coming out. I mean, the hardware that I'm seeing that's coming out for this is sweet. I mean, it's like, wow. Yeah, they've, Microsoft put out that reference, they put out the Surface tablet as a kind of a reference, right? We kind of talked about that. Would that actually be produced? Or was that really just a reference, piece of hardware?
Getting all sorts of crazy form factors happening, screens that fold and swivel and, bend and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be cool. I mean, and you know what? A lot of those prices are falling in the, a $400 to $1,000 price range. So we're not seeing, these are still not super expensive machines for what's coming out. I don't know. Go ahead, Andrew.
And there's some pretty exciting stuff coming down the channel too. I mean, I've of course got a bent for a product with an H&P logo on it.
Yeah.
But I know we've just made a press release that we've got we've got a couple of hybrid laptops about to hit the market. There's an all-in-one and there's an enterprise-ready tablet. So everything, Windows 8, fully Windows 8 compliant, the all-in-one device, there's a lot of pictures of it on the internet. It looks like an iMac.
Yeah.
But the difference is it's full Intel, it's full Windows. It'll just replace what you were running before It's got the look. It hasn't necessarily got the
bat phone.
Where can I throw this thing? Yeah, so
it won't shut off. Oh, there you go. Lots of good. I'm seeing some RT stuff come out as well. That it was like, are we going to see? Is it just going to be the Microsoft RT tablet that comes out, and I think I've seen another, I've seen a couple RT devices come out, so pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah, a few manufacturers seem to be hedging their bets and going with Pro or and RT on different, at probably mm-hmm. different price points, I'd imagine.
Yeah, yeah. I think we'll see some real competition come.
Yeah, variety won't be an issue. You'll have plenty to pick from.
No, there'll be, I think there's been some concern that there won't be enough hardware for the Christmas season for Windows 8. And I think there's almost, at this point, there's an adequate supply of Windows 8 that are running on Intel devices. These are non-RT. This is where you can get a desktop. There'll be plenty of devices that'll be available for Christmas from a lot of different providers. Yeah. So I think those fears have been a little, maybe at least I've seen in the last couple of weeks, a little bit alleviated. I think there's a lot of hardware coming. So, Andrew, do you want to finish your thought?
No, I just think that I think a large part of what we're going to see is that, I think that the big players are starting to man up. I know we're, we've got a raft of gear just about to hit. Lenovo have just announced a big range of gear, and I'm pretty sure from what I read in the media that, all the factories in China are, nose down, tail up.
Yeah.
Getting the units ready to, do fast drop all over the world and, get some gear into the retail channel in the next probably, I'd reckon the next 4 to 6 weeks, we're going to see a real big influx of new kit hit the retail channel.
Yeah. Well, just to remind folks, October 26th is the date. That's a Friday, and pop-up stores as well as Microsoft stores all here in the United States will have that some of that equipment. We don't know what yet. It'll be interesting to see what shows up. I'm sure there'll be some media blitz on that, and all kinds of cool stuff coming if you're in the Microsoft ecosystem. So, Dave McCabe from Home Server Show is going to launch SurfaceGeeks.net, and that's going to cover kind of exclusively Surface tablets, RT tablets, those kinds of things, and he'll podcast about that as well. We'll continue here to cover those. There'll be a big news around that, but it'll eventually die down as well. I'm sure we'll get caught up in that, but that'll be a good resource from now through Christmas, and you can get your tablet fix from the Microsoft side over at SurfaceGeeks.net. All right. One more thing for you, Rennie. You repurposed a modem and a router, or modem/router as an additional wireless access point.
Yeah, it's been something I've been meaning to have a go at for a while. I guess the use case is that, living in the subtropics, we do a lot of entertaining outside in the summertime, and it's nice to have a bit of music while you're swimming around the pool or, listening to the radio or the cricket or whatever it might be on. And, with mobile technology these days, you can do a lot of remote controlling over Wi-Fi. And so that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to, sit out on the deck and have a beer and, flip through the music on my media center and play it outside. And the wireless signal out there is a bit flaky, and sometimes it's okay, sometimes it's non-existent. So I had this old modem/router lying around that I'd replaced a couple of years ago, and I thought, well, maybe I can use this to extend the range of my wireless network. And probably not the right correct way to say it. What I wanted to do was to create another wireless access point that was nearer to the entertainment center and outside. So, yeah, basically, I think PC Doc spoke about this on episode 100 of the BYOB podcast. But it's pretty easy to do. Okay, it's plugged into a wired connection, the modem router, but yeah, all you do is, you connect it to a PC and log into it, 192.168. whatever it is, and all you have to do is turn off DHCP. I chose to change the SSID so I knew which access point I was connecting to. And for the hell of it, I just changed the channel as well, I think to channel 10 or 11 or something, so it's on. Not likely to get interference from the other wireless network in the house.
It's a good idea.
Yeah, and plugged it in into the. I took it off the computer and plugged it into the network, and bingo, it works fine, and it's basically just because I've got other gear that I was using a switch to connect in the lounge room. Then there's a HD PC, there's a HD home run, there's a AV receiver and a TV that are all internet capable. And this router's got, you know, gigabit network ports on it, so it's basically acting like a dumb switch with a wireless access point. So, you know, if you've got an old modem, modem slash router lying around, it's not a bad way to repurpose it if you've got a black spot you want to reach on your network.
So it is hardwired, though. You've got some wire over there, right, that you're going into it with. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's but a good, that is.
Yeah, I can get wireless, for, you know, all outside the house now, which is great.
Did you put it closer to the wall on the outside so it would be proximity, it would be closer?
It's actually inside, but...
Right, no, that's what I mean, but you get it closer to the outside wall, so to speak, so that it's close to the outside as possible.
Yeah, it's only 10 meters from our deck now, rather than, you know, 40 meters from the router that's right behind me here, so...
And maybe not going through as many walls.
Exactly, Just going through windows rather than brick walls and whatever else,
Yeah, no, it is good. So you turned off DHCP, right, on the new one that you set up, so it wouldn't confuse the equipment.
Yeah, and all the other, you know, the HTPC, for example, has got a fixed IP, and it's still fixed, and, you know, there's no issue there.
Yeah, and it's picking that up, and, that's cool.
It's just a dumb switch, yeah.
What brand is it?
That one was a Billion. I don't think it's very popular in the US, but there's BiPack 7800N. So it's a wireless. It's a wireless N router, basically.
Wireless N, gigabit, Ethernet, four ports in the back, type deal.
That's the guy.
Why did they decide four? Why couldn't it be five? You know?
Yeah, I don't know.
What's the magic number four? Why do all routers? Why are they 4 or 12? You know, it's like getting 8 hot dogs and 10 buns. I never could figure out
about the analogy, but I know where you're coming from.
Or is it 10 hot dogs and 8 buns? I don't know. I can't remember. I never could figure out why it was only 4. It seems like everyone, and it would be nice to have a fifth on there. I guess I do have a switch that's got 10. Oh, no, it's 8. So there must be something magic with the number 4. I don't know what it is. Well, cool. Yeah, that's actually a really easy project. So if you're the average guy and you have a, like you said, you've got a blank spot in the house somewhere or you're getting access, you know, upgrade your router and say you only got one, upgrade one and get a new one. Maybe it's got greater range or whatever, and then take the old one and move that into the dead zone, so to speak, and just turn off DHCP so the units don't get confused. And then you've got more coverage. Yeah, lock it down. Yeah. Did you lock it down with some security?
No, because...
Do you make those PCs authenticate?
No, it's we live in the middle of the bush, so there's no one around to get it, so I don't worry about it.
That's security by absent.
Yeah, isolation.
Yeah, there you go. Security by isolation. Nobody's coming out and doing that. All right, very good. Very cool. Andrew, you have a new toy, not as new as it was. You've had it for a little bit, but you and I have been going back and forth about your Samsung Galaxy S3. And I think this has shown up in the show notes a couple times, and we haven't given you a chance to talk about it. You've had it for a while. Tell me what you're thinking.
I had it for a couple of weeks now, so the Eagles finally landed. I was playing with my HTC Desire one day and did a factory reset on it, forgetting that I was running a custom ROM, and turned it into a technology brick.
Brick.
So I think after about 6 hours of sitting and cursing at it and fighting against it, I managed to resurrect it. But I happened to be talking to someone I know fairly well who says, "Oh, what do you want?" And I said, "Well, what do you mean?" And he says, "Well, I can get you a new phone." Okay, cool. So I ended up with a shiny new white.
Nice.
Galaxy S3.
So. Which is the exclusive color for Sprint in the United States on that, but
okay.
Yeah.
And so yeah, it's not the Pebble Blue and it's not the Garnet Red, and I'm quite happy with it. It's a very speedy device and definitely ticks all the boxes for me. I'm having a few issues getting used to Samsung's interpretation of what a phone interface should look like. But
yeah, you've got a little bit of a different UI. I've gotten very used to it. You know, I just whipped through that thing now like it's nothing.
Yeah, and one of my things was very much, you know, give it the benefit of the doubt and work with it rather than try and work around it. So, you know, I went through the phase of rooting it and gaining super access to the kernel so I could install some other stuff, and then that introduced some problems when a security fix came down for the latest Samsung vulnerability.
Right. Yeah.
So I ended up then going back and looking at the whole process again of resetting it back to stock and making it look so that it's never been toyed with, because one of the things Samsung have introduced in their phones recently is a flash counter. So the more times you change a ROM or change a kernel, the phone counts it. So there's a chap on the old XDA developers website who's got a utility that resets that.
Count, so, pointer count. Yeah, wow.
Yeah, so in the event that, you know, if for those with a Samsung Galaxy S2 or 3 who modify it, and I know Rich has done his.
Yeah, a couple of times.
Yeah, so there's a counter in the recovery mode. So this effectively resets that, and then you use another tool to reflash the stock firmware over the top and send it in for your warranty claim.
Yeah, great. I really like my phone. And what are the features? What do you think you like the best about? I mean, what are you using the most? What do you find yourself gravitating towards? Okay.
The camera at the moment, it's got an 8-megapixel camera, and you know, my old HTC, you'd press the camera button and it was almost like using a, you know, generation 1 point and shoot digital digital camera, whereas this one, I'll hold it up for an audio effect, but you hit the button and there's the image.
Right.
So it's straight away, it focuses as you hit the button, and it just takes the image like that.
It's very fast, for sure.
So I think there's going to be a lot of gravitation towards these new phones. You know, if nothing else, just for that. But you know, interestingly, you know, I don't know if people can see the screen, but I just took a photo of the Hangout,
mm-hmm.
and it's
is that my mug?
And it's picked out your face in it and asked me if I want to face tag you.
Yeah.
So that's how good the recognition software in it is
as well.
That's
pretty good.
That's fantastic the way it does that.
Does it have NFC? It's got NFC in it, right? Same version here in the United States?
Yeah, it does have NFC. The issue that we have in Australia is that none of our card vendors or retail vendors support it.
Yeah. Same in the US, by the way. Nobody's ready for NFC for the most part. I mean,
yeah, so I think the old Google Wallet, I think, is a great idea, and eventually it'll come to market. And then I think it's going to turn a lot of the payment industry on its head.
Yeah.
But that's just a matter of time.
It's a little bit of a phone that's a little ahead of its time. It's got some things in it that either they're not ready for from a software perspective, or like NFC, where the hardware just isn't out there yet. And so... I think you'll see 2013 will be the year where a lot of devices get NFC enabled, and then there's a lot of things you can do by bringing the devices together. And I think we'll see a lot of that integration right away, but we probably won't see a lot of sales integration type stuff.
Yeah, what do they call it? They call it Android Beam, I think, that one, isn't it? Where you touch the device together and it transfers your contact or your image or...
whatever you decide. Hey, what do you want to? Yeah, what do you want to share? There's a share feature, and then what do you want to share? Bam, it's kind of creepy touching the things together. But have you seen? I don't know if they're playing in Australia, but there's commercial. Samsung has taken out a whole bunch of commercials where there's these guys standing in line to get their Apple iPhones. And have you seen those? The Samsung guys come by. That is PC versus Mac. And that's Samsung. Yeah. I mean, right? Samsung is just ripping Mac on that one, or Apple on that one for sure.
Yeah, I think I tagged that one on Facebook the other day, and even a lot of my Apple, my very Apple focused friends were like, "Yeah, that's good."
I like when the guy says, or the gal says, are we going to get that? Well, next, we'll get that next time. Right. Oh, okay. Okay. We'll get that next time. Or when the guy, he's like, hey, are you getting, oh, so you finally gave up on your S3? And he's like, no. And his parents come up, and then she asks, is this where I stand in line to get apps? what an amazing, now, I mean, how far have we come that now the iPhone is being seen as your parents' phone?
Yeah. Right?
Oh, yeah. That's all the old people have the iPhone now. You know, that's your mom buys that. That's something you give to your mom.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing for mine is I've given this to Michelle a few times. You know, if she needs to make a call or whatever, and her iPhone's not handy, and she's been using an iPhone now for what would it be, close on 3 years, and she's always hated it when I hand her the Android phone and say, here, you know, go make your call on this, and she picked it up the other day, and you know, picks it up and presses the button. It's in the same spot as it is on the iPhone, and it says on the screens, you know, swipe screen to unlock. She swipes the screen. She presses the phone button. Goes, oh, look at that! It's the same as an iPhone.
Yeah, it's been ripped off from the iPhone, but yeah. they've paid for that. they paid $1 billion for that.
$1 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I guess the message is, you know, if you were contemplating a Switch.
Yeah,
it's not that big anymore, you know. Yeah. So the switch from iOS to Android used to be this momentous, you know, leap to change the way you think and the way you interact with the device. And I think, you know, now it's becoming very much closer.
Mm-hmm. And what service are you on there, Andrew?
I'm with our carrier Telstra. So Telstra's our biggest. They've got our largest coverage base, and they've just introduced a 4G network. They've just launched their 4G network in anger. This is a 3G phone, but we've got that. They're the carrier with the most coverage and probably the better level of service.
And you've found getting what you need. I mean, are you on 4G or 3G?
3G.
Okay.
Yeah. So the 4G device reports say that its battery life isn't great.
Right.
And I think that's due to the modem in the device, from what I've read. You know, the new iPhone's 4G. Great. You know.
Yeah. Right. It just pulls the battery life down. Rennie, what are you using for a phone right now? iPhone.
4S.
4S.
iPhone 4S. Yeah.
Okay.
I've had that for about 12 months now.
Yeah. And you're going to stick with the iPhone? You're going to go to a 5 or whatever the next version is by the time it comes around? Are you on a 2-year cycle like we are here?
Yeah, two year okay. cycle. So it's another 12 months, and you know, there'll be another 50 phones out there by then.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, we'll have had a complete civil war by that time, and there'll be some more shaking out, I imagine, of that. So
yeah, I think Windows Phone's going to come to the market in anger in the next little while too. So I think
in earnest, too. Yeah. I mean, I think they have some legitimate offering at this point. I think before it was just a warm up. So be interesting to see by this time next year, if they've made any traction. Right, they're about 3%. Windows Phone is about 3% right now of the market share. Be interesting to see in October of 2013 if they're any higher. They can't go any lower. I can't think. They have some. Those Lumia phones are nice, and they all appeal to some customers for sure. Well, navigation is second to none on them.
Yeah. Well, HTC and Samsung have come to the market now as well, in Windows 8 phone, of course. So, you know, you've got the other two major players. So you've got your Nokia, Samsung, and HTC. I mean, the only other major player in the market now is Apple.
Right. So,
it's going to be interesting times to sit on the sideline.
It's going to be a great Christmas time. I mean, there's so many cool things coming out for Christmas, so it'll be the Christmas of just some sweet gadgets. Speaking of gadgets, and this actually has nothing to do with that, but Andrew, you had mentioned in the show notes that Office 2013 is RTM'd and is out and available. Yeah. That came with very little fanfare. I guess I'll have to go out to TechNet and take a peek at it.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that very much slipped under the radar. I've had a little bit of a play with it in the preview release on Windows 8. The preview didn't have a heck of a lot of things in it that were terribly appealing to me. I use quite a few add-ins for Outlook, so productivity type apps for trying to keep my inbox down, which usually fail. But most of those add-ins don't work on 2013, or they haven't been ported as yet. So I'm sort of sitting there at the moment thinking, well, once we make a wholesale migration to it, then you know I'll be forced to go across. But at the moment, I'm quite happy with 2010 for what it does for me.
Yeah. And John Zadler in the chat mentions that this includes Office 365, Office 2013 applications, Exchange 2013, Link 2013, SharePoint 2013 project, and Visio 2013. So all the products, all the Office products have made their way to RTM.
That's interesting. And they're including Exchange and Link into the Office, Exchange, Link, and SharePoint now.
Yeah. Well, I think they're pushing, probably not, although I'm waiting for Skype integration on Link. I'd like to see, I need that for some of the things that I do, because I want to be able to reach students, college students, on Skype, but I want to be able to do it from my work laptop and use Link to get that done. So I was talking to the Windows admin guy the other day, and he said, yeah, Microsoft is definitely working on a plug-in for that, and it's out sometime, next version or next version and a half or whatever it is. So that'll be good to see. Yeah, you know, it's
in your career life cycle.
I think as fast as Microsoft's iterating right now, it's going to happen pretty soon. They are not messing around at the moment. And they're going to make some mistakes by doing this, but, you know, you can also release a phone where the apps or where the map application isn't very good either out the chute.
Yeah,
that's just what happens. If you're going to go speed to market and you're going to get some things done, you're going to release some stuff that doesn't work right out of the chute. So I actually applaud Microsoft for going a little bit faster. You know, what a world it is when a major Office product RTMs, and we are so busy with, I mean, we almost have RTM whiplash at the moment with all the products that have come out recently. That's just another example of stuff. I've been in the preview, and I've been showing folks the preview, and it's worked I don't use plugins, so no issues for me there. But
are the file extensions still the same as 2010? Is it docx for Word, or is there compatibility issues?
I don't know. Yeah.
I didn't look at it that closely.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know either. I don't know. I would assume no at this point, because nobody's made a major stink about it.
Nah, okay.
Yeah.
So I'm going to make an assumption 2013 is going to kind of be just a point release that just pretty much goes into the enterprise. It will be it's got some Windows 8 stuff coming, but I think it's going to be not a major shift, and enterprises that adopt it will probably adopt it with Windows 8. So,
and they're moving to a subscription model as an option anyway.
Trying to, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. They are, yeah. Lots of good info on that. Normally I wouldn't punt on this, but there's a lot of good info on that over at the WinSuper site. Paul Thurrott has been covering that probably better than anybody else. So if you haven't gone to the WinSuper site, he's got some good stuff that's out there. That guy does it for a living, and I'd like to send you to theaverageguy.tv just as much as possible, but I just don't I have a job. So there's some good information about that. Speaking of Outlook, Andrew, you've been you and I had kind of an off-show chat about the amount of email that's in your box, and you and I come from very different enterprise environments. I pretty much let all my we have a 90-day retention policy, and then it goes away, and I pretty much just let it go away. Yeah, I let it go. We have a 1 gig limit on our mailboxes. And I couldn't be happier to just let some of that email go away. You found a tool, a duplicate remover tool.
Yeah, so because of the nature of what I do and, you know, needing to produce email artifacts from time to time, I've got an Outlook rule that runs against my inbox. And so every mail that comes in or I send gets touched by this rule, and it pushes it out to an archive PST file. And it's great because if someone tries to recall an email, it's already in my storage folder. But one of the oddities with Outlook, and particularly when you're changing versions, so 2007 to 2010, is often the rule will run and create a duplicate in a folder. One of the other things that you see a lot with Outlook is if you're syncing to an iPhone via iTunes or Windows mobiles, and Nokia used to be killers for it, so you'd sync your Outlook contacts and you'd end up with 3, 4, 5 copies of everything in it. So there are a lot of duplicate remover products on the market for contacts. I was looking at my big PST file, which is my master copy of everything for the last 3 years, which has grown out to about 12.5 gig. And thought, well, I wonder how many duplicates I've got in that. And so I went out and did some delving and found a utility called the Accurate Outlook Duplicates Remover, which runs against your inbox or a nominated PST file or any Outlook object, and then goes through and finds duplicates. So across 12.5 gig of email history over the last 3 years, I had just over 650 meg of duplicate emails, which was round about 1,800 emails that were duplicated. So by the time you take in attachments and all the rest of it, it's not insignificant.
Yeah.
Did
you see any speed improvements? Because the PST is really what can slow down your Outlook opening and closing.
Yeah, so I've subsequently gone through and split that big PST file down because I realize it's in the danger zone. PST file sizing.
I thought 10 gig was about the limit.
Yeah.
Did that change older versions of Outlook?
Yeah, 2010 will go to 4 terabytes.
Okay.
But that's just a horrific concept.
Yeah. Yeah. You might as well have an Exchange server at that size.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly, in a portable one.
Right.
So yeah, I'm in the process at the moment of condensing down my PST files. So as we speak at the moment, I've got a compact running and it's been running for about 45 minutes and only managed to compact a gig out of that particular PST.
Do you archive off by year or do anything like that where you kind of move them into separate PSTs and move on?
Yeah, I do. So that's what I've just implemented. So I've got my master one and then I've created a 2010, a 2011, and I just run the archive process over that PST file.
Yeah.
And then I've got master PST files for my various clients, and then I do the same again. So I've got, customer A, and then customer A, I've got an archive for 2008, 9, 10, 11, 12.
To try and
minimize the size of those files.
You do need your own Exchange server, Andrew.
Yeah. But the disappointing thing for mine is that Outlook doesn't allow you to close off a PST file. So I think it was Notes, when you finished with an NSF file, if you wanted to make it an archive only, you'd set a flag on it that said this is now a read-only file. Whereas if you set a PST file to read-only, it breaks the way Outlook interacts with it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I don't like the whole PST system. I'm just going to be honest with you. I know it's part of what you have to do. And I'm sorry.
I think it's a very inefficient database.
Yeah.
Because one of the things that the PST does, it creates two copies of everything, yet you can only actually get to one copy of the email inside the PST file.
Right.
Which to me is a really redundant method of doing anything.
Yeah. Yeah, I have tried over the years to complete. I don't even. We've outlawed PSTs, and force everybody onto the network now in what we do. And so you can't even in our environment you can't even have those anymore. They for the most part the storage versions of them go away, and everything's stored on the Exchange server. But yeah, I'm sorry, Andrew. I apologize on behalf of humanity. And the enterprise, I apologize for you having to deal with that nightmare. Because I just don't,
It does come in handy, though. I mean, you know, occasionally you'll get a call from a contract you've worked on a couple of years ago, and they say, "Hey, do you remember doing blah 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 blah?" Because we've got a customer dispute, or we've got an internal dispute within the organisation, and you know, it helps people save their butt and potentially save their job.
No, right on. No, I know you have a business case for it for sure. So it's, you know, you have to keep them for those kinds of reasons.
Yeah. And typically what I do, if I finish working on a particular client, I'll shunt it off onto the home server, and then I'll burn it to DVD and I'll delete it off the machine.
Yeah.
Otherwise you end up with, you know, hundreds of gig worth of mail files.
But then you have to go back and get that. You know, if you ever need it, you got to pull the DVD out, put it in, you know, yank it off.
Yeah, I guess it's the cost of technology, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
And the cost of information.
A little bit.
You know, a lot of our clients use cloud archiving services. So, you know, for a similar purpose, every mail that comes in, you know, someone like Symantec with their Enterprise Vault service, you know, every mail that comes in, the user doesn't know about it, but it just gets pushed off to the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's more cost effective, and it's not to do it in the cloud. Because at least you're not getting charged on a per megabyte consumption rate.
Yeah.
To do it locally.
Although that's getting pretty cheap.
Yeah, true.
Cloud stuff's getting pretty cheap. So, well, good stuff. So that is that's called Accurate Outlook Duplicate Remover.
Yeah, bit of a tongue twister, but it worked Accurate very well.
Outlook Duplicate Remover. Good stuff. And Paul Brereton had put one in chat too. He uses Click Duplicate Delete Outlook. No, that's not. That's the name of the PHP one.
One click Duplicate Delete for Outlook.
Yeah, there you go. If you have that kind of problem, Rennie, do you use Outlook at all in what you do?
Yeah, Outlook is the backbone of my email for both personal and work. But you know, also I do Gmail and Outlook and Outlook.com.
Yeah. I've been using a lot of that. It doesn't do as great of a job of spam filter as I wish it did, but that's my one complaint with Outlook.com. But
That's a development cycle thing, though. I mean, you know, Outlook.com's a, you know, very much the next iteration of Hotmail. So
yeah,
it's a matter of time before they put the tweaks in, isn't it?
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, I hope that I've really enjoyed using it, and it's a great way of getting, you know, of consolidating all my email accounts into one place. Mm. And I just go there now, and I get everything except work email. I'm not going to move my work email to Outlook.com. I have two separate spots, and that's the way I'm going to keep it. No way am I going to do that. But for my Yahoo account, all my Google accounts, all that stuff go to Outlook.com. We talked about that, 12 weeks ago or whatever on some shows when it first came out. I keep hoping their junk filtering will get better. Google or Gmail does that better than none other, I think. My opinion is Gmail does it very, very well. Outlook.com doesn't. So Microsoft fixed that, okay? Just get in there and get that fixed. I a lot of junk I never saw when it was in Yahoo. Yahoo does it really well too, to be honest. They do. Although they're almost too aggressive. I was finding things in my spam filter that was good stuff.
I check mine every now and again and find I've missed a few things.
Yeah. But then you realize you didn't really miss them because nobody cared. You know, if the tree falls in the forest. If an email falls in the forest and no one's there to hear it, did it make a sound?
If it's important enough, I'll always pick up the phone or send it again.
Yeah, exactly. Right on.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, a couple things I want to cover. Andrew, thanks for that. One is I just posted over at homeservershow.com a review of the Tonido plug, which is this very interesting, you can kind of see it there, there's the name of it, and then this kind of interesting device, and it's about as big as it shows on the box there. It's not very big. You can put a 2.5-inch hard drive in it for one bit of storage, and then it's got a USB plug and a gigabit Ethernet jack on it. It's also got, Rennie, you were talking about a Wi-Fi hotspot. You can turn this thing into a Wi-Fi hotspot. So you can do storage it's kind of this NAS, I don't want to call it a Synology. Thank you, Andrew, for putting that in the chat there. It's one of these devices. It runs a Linux version OS on it. It must be an ARM processor. I haven't hacked it apart yet to see what's in there, but it's one of these hackable devices that it's got a really nice web page that you can go to, and it's got some, you can configure, you can format the drives, and you can definitely tell when you're in there it's Linux-based by the way it sets up the file structures, and it uses an EXT3 file format. It prefers that. You can use NTFS if you want. But it looks like they're continuing to kind of develop and build on this thing, and it's largely flown underneath the radar. They sent me, Dave had them send me one of these. We're going to give them away at the Home Server Show meetup, so let me just talk about that real quick. October 20th.
That's the reason I need to come.
There you go. You need to win one of these, Andrew. And while you're at it, Rennie, why don't you show up as well? You know, we get both.
I'm on it.
Okay. Get tickets. It's coming up quick. October 20th, Indianapolis. We actually have a location, again, if you're interested in joining. It's just an open, free tech day in northern Indianapolis if you're anywhere within 600. I'm driving 612 miles to get there. If you're anywhere within 600 miles, you should be there too. And if you go out to thehomeservershow.com, there's some information about it as well as a way to RSVP. Great to have you out there. While I'm talking meetups, I'm going to be down in Kansas City this weekend. By the time you hear this, it's probably too late. But Saturday, that's the 13th of October, I'll be down there for an event for one of my kids. And in the afternoon, I'm going to show up at 4:30 and do some rogue podcasting. I talked to the management today, and they said, absolutely not. You cannot podcast in our store unless you have permission from about 16 different marketing folks. And it's been cleared by Steve Ballmer and, you know, those kinds of I was a little sad. I knew it was coming. I just knew it was coming, but I was still saddened when I got the word this afternoon. So they can't really stop me from talking on the phone. So I'll probably be starting a Google Hangout as soon as I get in the store, and I'll have my earbuds in, and we'll be doing a pseudo podcast until they throw me out. And so we'll try and pull that off this weekend. So watch the Average Guy TV Twitter account. I'll be using that to kind of let you guys know what time we'll be live, and if you want to chime in on that, you can.
Just don't get arrested live on air, Jim.
Well, I'm going to start jumping up and down on the tables and then just say, well, there was some question about where I was supposed to podcast. So I just made it up. And so, yeah, I'll try not to get thrown out of the store in the process. But, it'll be interesting to see. This is a full-fledged store, not a pop-up. And it'll be interesting to see just how much hardware is in there. The other Jim in chat had said, you know, they better hurry and get hardware out before Black Friday. That's the day. I mean, it really needs to be, a lot of that stuff really needs to be in stores before Thanksgiving here in the United States. And I think some of that stuff's ready to go and will be released and available for purchase, especially like the Lenovo and some of the Acer stuff. I think that'll be available on the 26th. You'll be able to order that. The other Jim said, video cast your own arrest. How cool would that be? So you're taking me in. I got the phone up there. Look at the evil inherent in the system.
Don't you tase me.
I'm being repressed.
Occupy Microsoft.
Yeah, there you go. So all kinds of things going on. Again, I lost my train of thought. Anytime you throw in a Monty Python reference, you have to lose your train of thought. Lots of things coming up this weekend and next, and then we're giving stuff away on the 20th, so you want to be out there at the Home Server Show meetup. Also, one last thing, if you want to, Stitcher is doing a little voting contest of sort. And, of course, we're available on not only on YouTube, but we're also available on most RSS feeds, iTunes, and Stitcher is one of the places. If you don't want to download the podcasts to your phone and you just want to stream them, just listen to them, you know, listen to the streamed version of it and not have to download it each time. Stitcher is a great application to do that. Stitcher, STITCHER. A lot of live content that's out there as well as recorded stuff that you can, you know, listen to an audio stream. They are they're doing a contest to vote for favorite shows on Stitcher. So I'll put a link in the show notes if you want to pop out there and vote for us. Search for Home Tech Podcast and put your vote in on Stitcher under the tech favorite tech show, and I don't know, see if we can do anything. The listener counts have been up, and we have at least a couple hundred listeners, maybe more, in the field out there. And if everybody went out there and did that, maybe we'd show up, and it'd be kind of fun. So that is out there on Stitcher. You can also find that on our YouTube or on our Facebook page. If you go out to facebook.com/groups/theaverageguy, we have a growing, thriving community. Thanks to all you guys. And actually, right now at the very top of that page, let me pull that up real quick. Dennis had put a deal that he'd picked up. Oh, holy cow! I got a lot of traffic on Facebook right now. He had picked up at Walmart of all places. He had picked, I guess this is from Vizio, V-I-Z-I-O. He had picked up a Ultimate Ultrabook, super, super thin. Let me share this with you real quick. Hold on. Let me show you this. Now let's go to that one. And I'll click on the screen there so you guys see it. So you guys can see that, hopefully. The Ultimate Ultrabook, it's right now it's $599. It's a Core i3. Let me get to the specs.
These guys make some sweet hardware.
Yeah, super thin. It's a Core i3, 4 gig of RAM, 16 by 9, a 14-inch screen. And here's the most impressive thing. It's got 128 gig SSD in it. That's pretty cool. Dual band N, and then HDMI out, up to 7 hours of battery life. A pretty sweet. It's running Windows 7. It's not touch. But, you know, that's for $599 for, it's just out of stock. They sold it out. Dang it. Dang it. I think, though, you know what? I think we're going to see some Windows 7. If it's locked on Andrew, then it's, hold on. Let's see if that makes any difference. Oh, did that make any difference there? I changed that back. Can you guys see it? You know, while I'm talking about that, it is not, what are we using here? YouTube, it does some weird things. You think that, it should be switching over, and it's not. Let me see. I even switched accounts to try and help with that, but it didn't seem to work. Anyways, I think there's going to be some great deals out there here in the future for some Windows 7 stuff that's going out, but Andrew, you said you saw that. I mean, that's some pretty sweet looking.
Yeah, we've been looking at that hardware at work for quite a while now. Even though we work for a hardware manufacturer, there's a bunch of us who've been looking at the Vizio gear for probably, I'd have to say 6 months now. You know, some of their all-in-ones, some of their netbooks and ultrabooks are just, you know, fabulous looking pieces of hardware.
And any all-in-ones that you buy now are going to make a sweet upgrade to Windows 8. So,
exactly right.
And it's a $15 upgrade.
Yeah.
Yeah. So some good stuff coming. So, Well, gentlemen, we've reached our time, and I want to thank you, Rennie. It's always good to have you out, and you are always so faithful in the chat each week. It's good to have you out there, but it's always good to have you on the show as well. Thanks for coming out. And
pleasure to be here, Jim, as always.
Thank you. Good to have you. Andrew, great to have you back in the swing of things. Hopefully that we'll be able to string two or three of these in a row and keep you going on this. It's been kind of crazy. Oh, so folks who are asking, Christian, no, Christian hasn't left the show. He is prepping for some serious ACT stuff that's coming up here for his college entrance exams, and he just wants to hammer it. And so I said, hey, take all the time that you need. We'll get you back here. He's also working for NASA part-time, and life has just been really busy for him. So we'll get Christian. I feel like I haven't seen Christian in months. Kind of missing that kid. Yeah, yeah.
I'm feeling smart again, though.
Yeah, he does kind of when he's around.
Dumb.
when he's around, everybody's IQ just kind of drops. And he's such a smart kid. So Christian, we'll be glad to have you back. It'll be a couple more weeks. He takes the tests here pretty quick, and then I think he'll be back around early November. So Christian, we miss you, but it'll be good to have you back. Guys, thanks for coming on, and that'll do it for the Home Tech Podcast for tonight. Remember, we are live every Thursday night. out at theaverageguy.tv/live at 8 p.m. Central generally. And we're also available on YouTube and iTunes and now Stitcher. And actually tonight I'm going to try a broadcast out to Blog Talk Radio at 10 o'clock. And that's supposed to be a thriving community out there. I'm just going to take this recorded show and play it out there and see what kind of audience I can pick up out there. And if you haven't tried Blog Talk Radio, it's a really interesting way of podcasting. All the hosts and the guests call in, and it's kind of like old school AM radio from this, you know, from the 50s and 60s here in the United States. It sounds pretty wild. So we're going to try that tonight just to see how it works. Otherwise, you can get everything you need, video and audio on demand at theaverageguy.tv. Everybody have a great night. Good night, everybody.
See you guys.
Bye now.